This is Tax at the Speed of Tech, a podcast from BDO's Tax Practice. Each episode, we'll connect with inspiring thought leaders to get their take on pressing issues in tax and technology innovation, impactful trends, as well as their predictions for the future.
Welcome to Tax at the Speed of Tech. I'm Chris Dambola. Today, we'll be speaking with Spencer Orlin, a manager with BDO USA's Tax Automation and Innovation team. As a part of that team, Spencer engages with tax departments in the field, conducts whiteboarding sessions to understand the current state and desired future states, and implements and optimizes technology solutions. With experience across a wide range of technologies, Spencer takes a holistic approach to problem solving from data to deliverable. I have the pleasure of working closely with Spencer, and I'm excited to have him with us in the podcast today. Hi, Spencer. How you doing?
Hey, Chris. Happy to be on. Excellent. Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So listen, I noticed on LinkedIn, you said you're a big time baseball fan. Now, admittedly, I am not, but I'm curious if you played baseball and whether you played offense or defense.
That question was a little bit painful to hear. And clearly your lack of baseball knowledge is showing a little bit there, Chris. But I did grow up playing baseball. Didn't go out, my career didn't pan out the way I was hoping. And hence, I went into accounting. So couldn't hit a curveball, but, had a lot of fun growing up playing baseball and big Braves fan, from Atlanta, born and raised. So Braves won the World Series a couple years back. And that was a high point of my life. So yeah,
sure.
Big baseball fan.
I saw that documentary with Charlie Sheen years ago. So that's about as much as I know about Atlanta baseball. So speaking of getting into accounting, right, what pulled you into accounting? What pulled you into tax technology?
So accounting in general, I was, coming out of high school, I actually had a dream of being a sports broadcaster. I was on our local news, high school video news and doing some sports coverage there. And the more I got into that, the more I realized I enjoyed sports more as a hobby and didn't like making it a job. And then so going into college, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And I just knew I kind of wanted to challenge myself. And I'd heard, accounting, when you take your first accounting class, it's really going to open your eyes of how difficult it is. And I took it and I really enjoyed the logical nature of accounting, that, debits equal credits, that there's always a reason behind, journal entry. And I think that kind of appealed to a logical part of my brain. So I went through with that and really enjoyed my classes, came out and, got a job. This was my first career out of college as an intern, went right onto a state tax team, had never seen state tax. And so that was a big learning curve to understand all of the complexity that goes into any type of state tax structure. So the filings were immense. We had about 12 or 1300 state filings every year. And with that, all of the data that had to be managed to get those state filings done. So I was about 2 years into my career back in 2017 when I first was introduced to Alteryx. And I was, I think I'd just been promoted to senior accountant. And I had a manager at the time who made a, kind of off the cuff comment of saying, oh, well, this is going to make you redundant. And I had the thought, well, I don't want to be redundant. I want to be the one, building this stuff. Because I want to stay ahead of the curve. And, I started working with Alteryx workflows, working with data and ended up getting a role carved off for me on the team, where I had kind of been assigned our data management of the state tax function. So it was a brand new role. We really didn't know what we were getting into or what was going to take place with that role. But what I found personally in going through that is that, it was a much more stimulating part of tax for me than, just putting numbers on forms. There are parts of tax that require a lot of critical thinking, a lot of strategic thinking. And I think that's more than anything what I like. But early on in your career, you're kind of going to slog through, okay, get the numbers on the forms, get the provision done, do a year-over-year review. And it's kind of just step by step by step. And it can become, frankly, a little bit boring, at least for someone like me. So when I got exposed to those data concepts, and building models and being creative with thinking about how we're going to gather this data, how we want to analyze it, what kind of reporting we want to have. It just was very stimulating to me. And, started seeing a bigger picture there too of, how these concepts of data management and modeling and automation are incredibly relevant in tax, but also relevant across the world, right? Like broader finance, broader accounting. So I really got excited about the potential of just building up that skill set And then ultimately, you know, played that role on the state team for a couple of years, briefly had a stop on our internal innovation team, and then came to BDO about 2.5 years ago and been doing it with clients ever since and learned a ton. And, you know, the future is just, you know, very exciting for where all of this stuff is headed. So it just, it's a long-winded answer and the short way of saying, you know, very stimulating, very creative side of tax for me.
I mean, tax is basically just applying a simple rate to a number, right? So where does something like Alteryx come in? Like what types of problems do you solve? How do you apply that creativity specifically?
So I think when you look at any tax process, you can break it down to its most simple parts and you can say, okay, well, you know, using state apportionment as my example that I always go to when I think about this stuff, if you're talking about a simple situation where I have sales in, you know, one or two jurisdictions, and I just need to say, okay, well, 50% of my sales are in Georgia, 50% of my sales are in Florida. So then, you know, I can take my federal taxable income, multiply that by 50% for each one of my apportionment factors, and I'm basically done. Naturally, as you get with bigger companies, bigger situations, different facts and circumstances, it becomes a lot to manage. So, you know, where you may have differences in state rules, differences in company structure, you may have some disregarded entities. You really have to be thinking about how you can get everything from that source area, you know, whether it's an ERP system or even an offline spreadsheet or any type of situation where you're bringing data in, and how you manage that and how you build a sustainable model really takes a lot of forward thinking. And you don't want to, you know, spend the effort to build something in year one and then have it break in year two. So That's the part that's, I think you can get a little bit creative with and say, okay, well, you know, I have different facts and circumstances at different companies. First of all, coming from a perspective of, you know, a consulting practice, but even within, you know, your own department, if you're working for a company and, you know, you might build something that works today, but you may have a reorganization or you may go, you know, have an acquisition, something that changes your facts. And you want to make sure that the model you're building is equipped to be flexible enough to handle those changes in facts. And I think that's the part where it's very strategic and can be very stimulating and creative.
Yeah, that's very powerful. And you mentioned redundancy, right? When that was first mentioned to you, was that a real concern for you? And do you think that's a real concern for folks when they look to this level of this automation?
I think when people hear about automation, naturally you're gonna think, oh, well, am I going to automate myself out of a job? Or, you know, am I going to be, if I don't get on board with this, am I going to become redundant? And I think it's a legitimate concern for people, but I don't think it needs to be. I think the idea here, I had a very great director who would express that concern to him as well. And he had an awesome response to it. It was basically saying, well, if you figure out a way to automate your entire job, you're an incredibly valuable person. And whoever your employer is not going to fire you for being that strategic and that creative and, you know, eliminating day-to-day work. You know, they're going to go find something else for you to do. So I don't think it is a legitimate concern, you know, from a perspective of a builder. And then from the other perspective of someone who's just using the benefits of automation, like a client in our situation, that same director had a great point of view on, you know, tax analysts, tax accountants in general, and what we spend our time doing. And he always used to say, you know, we're tax analysts. We're not data analysts. You know, any time that we spend wrangling with our data to get it to a point where we can actually do the tax analysis is time wasted. And chances are we're not doing that data analysis right anyway, because we're not experts in that field. So in my mind, you're shifting time away from, you know, wrangling with data, filtering through the noise. If you have a model in place that is meant to take all of that noise, normalize it, and give you an output that's ready to be analyzed, ready to do modeling and scenario comparisons and tax planning. I mean, that's really what tax analysts should be being paid to do, right? So I think it's just a shift of where the time is spent into higher value activities, right? Like, and not just sorting through the mud.
Right. So data wrangling, reducing manual tasks, right? Repurposing activities. What do you think the future of tax technology looks like?
I think there's still a lot of foundation that has to be laid. You know, you compare tax to other parts of a corporation, manufacturing, marketing, even finance to a degree. You know, It's all still so immature that, you know, I always tell my clients that in order for us to unlock the potential of all of this information, we have to build the foundation, right? You can't build a house and want to build the upstairs and the bedrooms and the attic and all stuff before you lay the foundation. You have to get it all in place at the bottom, and then you can build on top of it. So in my mind, I think the future is going to be, once these foundational data models are put in place, these foundational automations, then you can start building out better reporting, better integrations, you know, better flow of data, better analysis, right? Like, you know, more powerful scenarios. You know, I've got a proposed tax law change coming down from DC, and I want to know what my impact of that is. You know, all of a sudden now I've got great foundational information, my base case, right, that I can then use to do ad hoc modeling as necessary. So I think we're going to see more of a shift into that. And the other area that I think is going to continue to evolve is the data storage with all of this stuff, because, you know, we build great models for our clients, and then, you know, many times the data is ultimately stored in an Excel file somewhere or on a SharePoint site or wherever. I think that the conversation has naturally shifted, and we're focused on this now lately in our group, into, you know, where can we actually formally store this data for historical record tracking? You know, I get excited by the idea of 10 years from now, again, with the idea that we lay the foundation, we start, you know, storing this information. I mean, the power of the trend analyses that we can see, you know, 10 years down the road, if we start today, is very exciting to me. So, you know, all of it to say, lay the foundation, better reporting, you know, better analysis, and, you know, strong historical record keeping.
Yeah, absolutely. So put yourself back in the corporate world for a moment, right? You're on the other side. You're saying, all right, you know, that makes sense. I need help with data wrangling. I want to repurpose my high value resources to do the high value work I pay them to do. I can see this future state where then we've got better data. Now, presumably, we've got better analytics and reporting, maybe even planning and forecasting. But at the same time, there's a lot of noise, right? And there's essentially these hype curves that are left to be determined in terms of, you know, what technology is real? How fast do I need to be moving to keep up, to stay ahead? Essentially, what's real, right? And how do you measure through those conversations to kind of plot yourself on that journey against, you know, what's happening in the market, what technologies are available?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it takes a little bit of self-reflection. You know, you have to be honest with yourself and say, you know, where are we truly at? You know, what are our people doing? You know, what are people capable of doing? You know, you don't want to plug in technology just for the sake of plugging in technology. I think you have to make sure that, you know, it's going to be a successful technology journey. So, you know, assessing yourself and saying, and being real with yourself to say, you know, what can work, what is, you know, maybe too much for us right now. You don't want to start with something like a dashboard or a tool like Tableau or something like that, if you don't have the basics around just managing your information, basic automation, really a good grasp of things. So I think like there's a continuum of it, you know, very early stages where everything is manual. Then some people have, you know, nice Excel workbooks that have formulas in them, and macros and things like that. All of that can get unwieldy too. That's a whole different conversation, obviously. Mm. But I think, you know, understanding where you kind of sit currently, and then, you know, not to shamelessly plug ourselves, but, you know, work with a company, a firm that does this kind of stuff and you trust, that has your best interest in mind. And they can help guide you when it comes to like industry benchmarking and things like that, and helping you get up to speed. But you got to start somewhere. So, you know, no place is the wrong place. And some companies are more mature than others, but I think the trend is that everybody's trying to do, you know, more with less, right? You know, we've got less full-time resources, less time in the day, it seems, and claiming some of that time back is a good goal. And the way you do it is with, you know, building this type of stuff on the foundation.
So to put it in baseball terms, you don't score a touchdown without fighting for a few rebounds.
I was really hoping you were actually going to hit me with something like very relevant to baseball, you know, but you just went completely off the rail again. So, you know, we'll just go with that. Yeah. Touchdowns and rebounds.
You're going to keep waiting for that. That's it's not going to come.
Fair enough.
So let's put our head up in the clouds for a minute, right? There's Web3 and ChatGPT and Metaverse. Do any of these have any relevance to tax reporting?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I've been playing with ChatGPT myself a little bit. Man, what a powerful tool that is! It is some crazy stuff. It's a little scary at times with just how powerful it can be. And I think, you know, there's going to be a place for it. You know, when it comes to, you know, asking plain English questions to get answers, you know, I think that in a way there's always going to be, at least in my opinion, some level of human involvement, because some judgment call, some, you know, strategic decisions, you know, an automated and artificial intelligence can tell you something, but ultimately, you know, we need to be the ones that make the decision for the company. But I think if anything, it's going to become a bigger tool in the tool belt to help us get our arms around changing regulations and what's going on with, you know, different, you know, jurisdictions across the world. But, you know, a lot of so much that impacts tax is your own organizational structure, your own planning. So I think that part is because it's kept kind of internal to your own company, you know, that you work for. I don't think there's going to be a layer that, unless your company were to implement its own artificial intelligence model, which obviously a lot that goes into that. But my opinion of it is that, you know, it's going to be a very helpful tool in the tool belt, something like a ChatGPT. Yeah, we're still evaluating what the right place for true artificial intelligence is. You know, you hear the buzzwords a lot. We need machine learning. We need artificial intelligence. And again, is that jumping to phase 10 when we're currently still here in phase 2, right? Of just let's build that foundation. And then, you know, again, once you have 10 years of high quality data, who knows what you can do with it? You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you could likely analyze and build some type of machine learning model on that, you know, high quality information. But, you know, the thing that a lot of people don't, you know or people don't tell you about those types of models is just how vast the data is that sits under the hood there. That, you know, it, for a machine learning model to produce semi-accurate results, I mean, we're talking about billions of records of data at least for it to get a decent sense of trends and how it can make recommendations. So, you know, even the biggest clients that we have, you know, you're talking tens of millions of records, and it's a long way to go until you get to that billion standpoint. So, you know, as we go deeper into automation with specific clients, and, you know, it's not summarized information, and maybe we're truly getting to transactional basis, you know, right off of a point of sale system. I mean, in theory, you know, I think that's where a lot of this stuff can get more powerful, and some of those concepts could be applied. But I've said it a couple times already, but I think it starts with, you know, got to build out that foundation before we can jump to any type of consideration like, you know, artificial intelligence or machine learning.
Definitely. You mentioned people in there. I don't think we've talked enough today about the people side of this, right? What is the role of people in the success of technology deployment?
I mean, it's critical. Like we've had great successful technology and automation engagements where, you know, we have really strong people at the client, and then we've had less successful ones where, you know, we don't have as strong of people at the client. And to me, like, that's what I tell my team, and that's what I tell anybody else that's doing this type of work, is that having that type of person that understands the capability and at least has the vision for what this stuff can do is basically completely critical. And you see more and more companies that are dedicating, you know, significant resources to this, where, you know, they've got entire departments, but those lessons can be taken and used for smaller companies as well, even if it's just one person. You know, and that type of person, you know, if you're at a company and you're excited by the idea, you know, almost every company needs that type of resource available. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for you as an individual to go out and differentiate yourself, right? Like, if you're the one who's going to be keeping this technology focused, I mean, this is the trend of where everything is headed. But the people are, you know, the people are the decision makers. The people are the strategic builders. You know, just plugging in any type of technology solution without ownership of it is a recipe for failure, without a doubt.
So if I could paraphrase, right, it's not necessarily possessing a bench of technologists out of the gate that can just be hands on the keyboard immediately. It starts with culture and mindset.
100%. Yeah. I mean, you take somebody that wants to learn, and I tell this to, you know, some staff that work with me, is I don't expect you to know anything on the front end, but you know, I can teach you. And if you're excited about the idea and you want to learn this type of stuff, then, you know, we can teach you how to do it. And, you know, hardly any companies are going to have that bench available, right? Like there's not many people out there that have the right blend of tax and tech right out of the gate. I mean, I think it's a growing, you know, market of people that are building those skills because of this type of grassroots cultural movement. But it's certainly not there right now. So I think there's still a ton of potential for whoever wants to learn this stuff to learn it and then become like a key contributor to your company.
And speaking of that next echelon, right? So it sounded like, if I heard you right from your experience, when you started down this path, it was the abundant sexiness of T accounts and SALT accounting that pulled you in, as it would anyone before you got into the technology realm. But with folks coming into the departments now and into the future, what is their expectation? What do they expect to walk into? What's going to pull them in?
I mean, I think there's probably a bigger, a high chance that you're going to walk into something that's in progress, right? And that's challenging. You know, when you get thrown into something that is not your own and you have to find your place in it, you know, that's tough. And, you know, it comes with time and people make mistakes in builds and they don't automate something the right way. The foundation is a little shaky. So I think that is a chance. If someone's fresh out of college, they may come and find themselves in a situation where there's a couple people already at a company and they've already talked about some of this stuff and maybe they're using some automation concepts and you have to find your place in that. But there's also a high chance that if you're coming into a mid-market size company, that you may have nobody there that is really considering this type of stuff. And that's a great opportunity. You know, I think about all this stuff in the context of opportunity and selfishly, you know, your own opportunity. You know, where could you take your career? And people want to, you know, if you want to go be a tax attorney or you want to just be a tax leader, you know, if you get excited by the idea of automation and you like working with data and you enjoy that side of things, then there's so much opportunity in that space. But, you know, to me, like you talked about the accounting and what drew me in, and I mentioned that it was like the logical nature of it. And I think that takes a certain type of, you know, brain, like left brain, right brain, whichever one it is. You know, that stuff just feels good, right? Which is just probably the nerdiest thing I will say, like in the next probably 3 days. I don't give myself too much credit there. But, you know, within all this stuff with these models and this data management, it's all so logical. Like I had a guy that I used to work with that, you know, we would be building a workflow together and he would say, I can't figure out what's going on here. And then we would figure it out. And he would say, oh man, like that was great. You know, thing he loved about it was that like, every time there's an issue, there is a logical reason why it was an issue. Which, you know, many times in traditional tax, there may be an issue and it's not as logical. It might be more interpretive, which has its own creative connotations and, you know, being able to creatively understand, you know, regulations in the context of your facts, like that certainly has creative components to it as well. I just personally love that it's so logical and that, you know, it just makes sense in my head, I guess is just the long way of saying it, that, you know, when you think about where information is coming from and where it's going to and what you got to do it in the middle to get it there, it's logical and it makes sense and it flows. So if that's your mindset, you know, it could be a great space to explore.
Yeah. So technology, right? We start on this path to acquire some technology. It's on a journey to add more technology. And then we add that technology on the additional technology. We've got a better place. But is there such thing as too much technology, though? Like how much is too much?
I think there's 100% that such thing as too much. And to me, it goes back to the people, right? Like we can't just plug in things that are just going to sit there and not be used. We have to understand who our people are and what they're capable of. And, you know, plugging in the technology at the right level and the right size. You know, for some companies that may a tool like Alteryx might not work because they don't have somebody that's going to be able to adopt it. Other companies might have strong Alteryx users and they don't have Tableau or they can't get Tableau because they just don't have either capacity or the knowledge base to successfully deploy some type of dashboarding tool like that. Not to say people can't learn. Again, it kind of goes back to that willingness to learn and the excitement around some of this stuff. If you have people that have capacity, want to learn, and say, raise their hand and say, I want to be the dashboard guy, then great. You know, that's a perfect application to go plug in some additional technology. But I would say in general, they're definitely, you know, you definitely can overburden it. If you say, well, you know, maybe I'm a tax director at a mid-market company and I've got a team of 15 people. And I say, well, I know we need to be doing this stuff. So I'm just going to go get everybody Alteryx licenses. I'm going to get everybody Tableau licenses. And then they just sit there. And, you know, another thing about technology and getting it plugged in is, you know, making sure that people have resources they need to actually pick it up and use it, because there's the excitement and there's the, you know, people that want to learn, but, you know, you can get burnt out quickly and you can get frustrated quickly if you don't really know how to even get started. Fortunately, some of these tools like Alteryx, Tableau have great communities of people online that you can go ask questions to. And that helped me personally a ton when I was first getting started, you know, as an Excel user. As stupid of a question is, you know, how do I do a VLOOKUP in Alteryx, right? Like, how do I do a SUMIF in Alteryx? And it's a totally different way of thinking because it's not a VLOOKUP. It's not a SUMIF. It's all data oriented and not just spreadsheet oriented. But, you know, long-winded way of saying, yeah, if you have, you can't just throw technology at your tax department and just expect it to fix itself, right? Like, that's where I think the technology can become unused, you know, kind of an overburden, you know, wasted money and cost if the people aren't there to pick it up. And it kind of is a vicious circle in a way too, as I'm thinking about it in my head, because, you know, you might have people that have so little time because they're so held by, another great quote from my former boss, the tyranny of the now, which I just love that term, because we're beholden to it. You know, you say, oh, I've got a deadline next week, and I know I want to do this automation stuff, but man, I got to get that deadline done. So I'm just going to work a 60-hour week and slog through it. And then you have weeks and weeks and weeks like that. And then no one has time to actually pick up and adopt anything, right? So it is a bit cyclical sometimes, which is why, you know, it's good to take downtime and figure out, like, in that space, okay, you know, maybe it's after busy season. Can we have an evaluation? Where does technology make sense? And then again, you know, consider working with a team like ours, because we have, this is what we do for a living, and we can help you get started on that side of things too. But I guess that's my answer. Long answer.
Yeah, no, that's been my experience as well, right? I think a lot of people, if they've been fortunate enough to be a part of different attempts to implement technology, have learned from successes and failures, right? Taking on too much, having too lofty of goals, using the next big thing before maybe it's fully baked, right? There's any host of, you know, even when it comes to just navigating the budget conversation, right? How much is too much budget? How hard do we fight for this budget? You know, then how do we show that return? And all the while managing that, balancing that culture of wanting to strive for better and implement technology, but also keeping that culture permeate through the deployment and the upskilling of the resources so that it's utilized properly all the way through.
One thing that we haven't really talked about too much is just like employee morale too, right? Mm-hmm. Like when I heard you just talking about the culture and you know, the people, you know, one thing that personally resonated with me again, when I started on this is, you know, I was kind of getting pissed off, right? Like working the same type of tax returns, doing the same thing over and over again. It felt very unstimulating to me. And chances are, if I hadn't switched, I would have left that company and found a place that, without knowing it yet, you know, something that I felt was going to be more creative. And, you know, you might have really strong people who are just stuck doing the menial tasks and, you know, may want to explore this type of thing. So again, that self-reflection as a leader to say, you know, maybe I need to go talk to my people, figure out, are they happy? Are they unhappy? Do they want more? And then, you know, can plug in the technology where it makes sense.
Yeah, it's funny. When I first started in this career, I was at a some sort of small conference where we broke out into tables. And instead of just opining on the conversation at hand, it erupted into everyone sharing who has the worst close process, right? Oh, my company, you know, gives us a 2-hour break in the evening, but doesn't pay for a hotel downtown. You know, my company doesn't expense dinner for us to bring in or whatever, you know, back and forth and back and forth on grueling close cycles. And I had that moment at that time of, my God, what am I doing here? Fast forward to a week ago, I think just over this past weekend, there was an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal about how tax or accounting more broadly is lacking a cool factor and needs a facelift to attract more people
in. You posted that on LinkedIn. I wanted to check that out.
I sure did. And I did it because I read that and I was like, what are they talking about? And I have to remind myself, not everybody is on the technology side, which is a pretty great place to be.
For sure. You know, I know you're a champion of cool within our own group. You know, I know from your LinkedIn, you got the tattoos going on. You're a pretty cool guy, Chris. So I think you're breaking that stigma yourself. So the more we can all do that.
I'm going to add champion of cool to my LinkedIn byline.
We'll see if we can get that on your official title as well.
I'm going to fight for it now. Well, Spencer, I'm sorry that your career in baseball, or as I like to call it, the old nine pin, didn't pan out for you. But it sounds like you're in the right place. It sounds like your skills have developed in the right way. And I'm excited to see where your career goes from here.
Appreciate it, Chris. And thanks for having me on. And you know, good luck with the rest of the podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Tax at the Speed of Tech, a BDO podcast. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Head to BDO.com to access resources cited in this episode and learn more about BDO's approach to tax innovation. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, or if you want to discuss your organization's tax technology strategy, send us an email at tax@thespeedoftech@BDO.com.